Terry Savage joins us to talk about, let's start with I-bonds, Terry. How about that number, huh?
Oh, unbelievable. The only free market rate for consumers, because your CDs are so low and even treasury bills are so low because the Fed keeps buying them up and or has been up until now. But 9.62% is this six-month payout on Series I bonds from May 1st through November 1st. But if you bought them earlier, like last time when it was over 7%, which was shocking, that just means that the new six-month rate for this 6 months will accrue at 9.62%. It changes every 6 months. It applies to all your old I bonds. So the sad thing is, I mean, there are a lot of people who have a lot more money than $10,000 that they would love to get 9.62%, but you're limited to $10,000 in purchases for I bonds. Basically, there is a way to use your tax refund, but that passed now. So $10,000 is what you can put in it. I just want to make this point. People keep posting, well, how do I buy I-bonds? Go to terrysavage.com. They're the top column, because I updated it this morning, is about buying savings bonds. You must go online to buy them. Don't be intimidated. Treasurydirect.gov. Click on individual, or I have the link in, right there in my column. And it takes the money out of your bank account, your checking or savings, just like if you were buying something online, and you now have an account with the government.
What's the answer to this question? Does it make sense to withdraw $10,000 from an IRA to buy an I-bond?
No. You cannot buy I-bonds inside your IRA because the Treasury doesn't act as custodian. You're going to pay taxes. Well, let's just assume you're in the lowest tax bracket. You're paying even 15%. You don't want to pay taxes and then put them in I-bonds to get 9%. So don't take money. You can't do it with your IRA money. But if you have other money, you don't have to buy the full $10,000. But if you had $2,000 sitting in a CD. And the other thing, I just really want to make this point. This only works if you're going to hold these 5 years. Otherwise, at some point, if you take them, you must hold them a year. And if you take them out before 5 years, there's a three-month interest penalty. So this should be money that you're willing to put away. So if it's your money that you might need next Thursday if your tire blows and you need new tires, that's not for I-bonds.
Terry, there's two other things we need to talk about, the stock market and Social Security calculations for people. Just give me your long view on or your overview of the stock market. What are you thinking about today?
I think it has lower to go. I think this is a sad way of putting it, but I don't think there's been enough pain or enough fear yet for us to consider this a bottom. It doesn't mean the market won't bounce around. But I've said for the last 6, 7, 8 months, this is a time to have some money set aside, your chicken money, even though it's still not earning very much, because those who are close to retirement, and I don't want to do this definition again, but if you're in retirement or close to retirement, it's not that the market isn't going to come back in your lifetime. If you're 65, you got another probably 20, 25 years to live. So, yeah, we'll see another bull market. But what happens to people who are no longer contributing and this is what they're going to live on, they panic when the market goes down and sell at just the wrong time. So the way to keep yourself from panicking is, yes, keep some stocks, keep those mutual funds, but have enough cash so you say, well, I can live this out. I can live this out. It's going to make you have a very sinking feeling when you get your quarterly statement, which a lot of people just did in recent weeks. And I once had $482,000. I never thought I'd have that much money. Now I'm down to $421,000. What happened? Well, bonds went down, stocks went down, and your heart sinks. So if you have enough cash on the side to say, that's okay, I can ride this out, then don't fool yourself, because it's going to be hard to ride out. I think there's a lot more downside left.
Terry, earlier, I'll pause here, and then I want you to respond to this, but we read a letter from one of our listeners, and it's about four guys who are golfers. They're in their 60s. One is 71, and they aren't maybe of one mind, but plenty of them want to start taking Social Security early. And I'll just read part of this letter to you. The 66-year-old started taking his Social Security last year because he said if he waited until he was 70, his break-even on Social Security collection wouldn't happen until he was 79. His parents both died in their early 60s. I just want to press you a little bit, Terry, on behalf of people who want to take it early. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with syndicated financial columnist Terry Savage. Terry, a moment ago, I read to you a part of a note from a listener. The guy says 66-year-old started taking his Social Security last year at 65. He said if he waited until he was 70, his break-even on SS wouldn't be until he was 79, and his parents died when they were young. What do you say to him?
I don't know where to begin. Let me say this. You remember the old saying when computers first came around, garbage in, garbage out?
Geico.
I would file that reasoning under that category. But let me back up a second and say, I will give you the savage truth, but I cannot convince you if you are bound and believe that you're right. Let's put it this way. Las Vegas. John, have you ever gone to Las Vegas?
Yes.
Okay. Look at all the free drinks they give away in Las Vegas. Think about it, okay?
Right. Yeah.
Especially to the high rollers.
Yep.
Okay. Why? How can they afford to do that? Because the house always wins, and people will come there and throw down their hard-earned money on the table and gamble, even knowing that there's a slight edge against them, because they think they can beat the odds, or they're calculating the odds that they'll be the one that beats the odds. But all those beautiful hotels that have been built and all the free buffets where you can eat all you want, that get you in there, keeping you in there without windows to gamble night and day, prove that the house always has the odds, and yet people still go because it's a form of entertainment. Well, for our friends out there, you're entertaining yourselves, but you're not using the correct facts. Now, let me just start with this, number one. Forget what your parents lived to. The life expectancy of your father was in the 60s or 63 or 64. The average life expectancy today for a man is going to be at least well into your 80s. But forget you beating the averages. You always think you're above average. Why wouldn't you think you might be above average and live into your 90s? But the facts are that your Social Security-based check increases roughly 8% for every year, or it decreases if you take it before full retirement age by a roughly 8% a year. And every year you wait after your full retirement age, which as of today is close to age 67, so we'll use 67. If you wait another 5 years, 4 years until you're 70, then you will get an additional 8% in base pay. That's number one. So it's the base pay, and then you're doing the ad, well, what if I don't live that long? It's not just the base pay. It's the inflation adjustment on top of the higher base that really gives you the leverage kick to wait.
I know that.
Because you get a bigger increase.
We understand, but Terry, you're asking people to forego 5 years of monthly checks.
Wait a minute. Well, let me just finish. The third point is, if he dies, and his widow, let's say she didn't work very much and doesn't have a high benefit of her own or any benefit, she's going to get his higher Social Security benefit because he waited and is a higher base check. And finally, those who say, well, what if it's not there? They're always going to print enough money for Social Security, and they'll always adjust it upward for the inflation that causes.
Yep.
The math is wrong, John. I understand how tempting it is. Listen, if you have terminal cancer, if you have in your family, everybody dies in their 60s because of a genetic condition or something like that. But then you know, you weigh those odds. But in general, on average, the fact is that you are better off waiting. Certainly not taking it early.
But you have to admit that there are some people who don't live that long and for whom the math would benefit them.
Yeah, but how do you know?
I don't. I do know.
How does this man know?
Here's the other thing. What
so
about
play the correct odds. Play here, the correct odds. Of course, if the average age of a male who's 65 today was have another life expectancy of 17 years or 18 years, whatever it is currently, of course that average is made by somebody who would die younger and some who live, in, like my dad, into his mid-90s.
I told you she wouldn't like this. Okay, but here's the other thing, Terry. What about the money that I'm not capturing all of those years that I could be spending and doing things with?
Well, look. Let me back off for a second and say there are some people for whom this debate is not one of let's bait Terry Savage into a corner and make her defend this. There are, I just forget the number, but 40% of Social Security recipients have used Social Security for 90% of their living expenses. So So these people, this debate is a moot point. They need it when they need it. They lose their job at 63 or 64. They have no way of getting another job.
Right. Okay, so there's that.
They've got to take it.
Okay.
I'm not talking to those people. I'm talking about the people out there. I respect that. You have no choice. Thank God you have Social Security.
Okay, wait a minute. No, hold on. I know you got something to say, but hit the brakes on that. So for some people, it is a financial necessity. Even if it's lower, they just don't have anything else, right?
Exactly. I mean, okay. What am I going to say?
We haven't said that a lot. I think we should say that. Okay, fair enough.
Oh, okay. But I think you gave me, I don't know whether these were golfers or whatever they were.
They are.
Golfing buddies. Okay, so they're having an intellectual debate using the wrong facts. They have a choice. So let me say this. There's an awful lot of people in America, and many of them in our listening audience, who are going, what is she saying? I took it because I had to. I respect that. I understand that. I'm talking about people who, like these people who wrote in, who have a choice and they're sitting there debating. And the financial fact, the actual mathematical fact.
I got that.
They should wait. But if you can't wait, I mean, who am I to tell? I'm not telling you to starve. Until you turn 66 and two-thirds to collect Social Security. What I am saying is, though, if you have an IRA, you might be better, and you have the choice here now to make of when to take Social Security. You might be better off withdrawing money from your IRA, okay, because I don't think you're going to get 8% average return over the next 5 or 6 years.
That's an interesting calculation. That's an interesting point.
Because where are you putting your IRA? In bonds, which are dangerous because rates are going up, and in stocks, which are dangerous because rates are going up. And you might get not only a no return on it, but you might have a negative return. So if you have 5 years that where you could maybe take the money out of your IRA without penalty, you're retired and you're over 59 and a half, live on that and postpone that wonderfully generous annuity called Social Security. It's not like a pension check. It gets adjusted.
It's 1226. Terry Ann, you got to answer these questions now. These are about I-bonds. Can children buy I-bonds?
You can buy them as a custodian for a child, or you can buy them as a gift for a child. If they're in the child's name alone, one day down the road it might impact financial aid, but don't worry about it now.
Terry, Miss Savage talked about these I-bonds last year as I was driving my son to school at Illinois State. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We got one for everyone in the family. Buying them was beyond simple. That's about the I-bonds. And John wanted to say something on line one or ask a question that I think other people might have. John, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. My question is pretty simple. Is it $10,000 total, or is it $10,000 a year that you can buy them?
Okay, I'm not sure everybody can hear you, but he said, is it $10,000 total?
$10,000 a year.
You can do it $10,000 next year as well.
Yeah, sure.
Well, good to know.
Okay.
I'm exhausted.
Me too. I'm sorry it's a short day. I have a speech, but I love being on, and next week I'll come back for more time if you'll have me.
No, now we're not going to put you on anymore, Terry.
We
wouldn't go anywhere without you. That's Terry Savage. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
And by the way, those things on I-bonds, lots of text messages and calls about that. TerrySavage.com, a very informative page about how to do it. And you may have heard John Hansen talk about his Monday night show. And you can listen to the podcast at WGNradio.com. And each of them walk you through how to capture that 9.6% for 6 months. It's 920. The numbers matter today. Gosh, lots of texts about our segment with Terry Savage, producer Pete. Every decision you make in life is a gamble. For a lot of people, it's financial necessity. I'm so glad we got to that point, because I think we've long talked with Terry about the investment and the retirement plan relative to Social Security. What about if you need it to live on? And she said, well, I'm not going to tell you to starve. My goodness, that's a different conversation. It's a distinction we have not made well in the past. What if you can't afford to wait until 70? I need money now. Terry Savage makes me so angry. What if I just can't work past 65? Dogmatic Terry, nuances preferred. Every situation is different. Well, she was arguing the math and probabilities, which is what she should do. And then you make whatever decision you want. She said on this show that her brother's taking Social Security early. So clearly not everybody is persuaded by her argument, but she is going to tell you what the math is, and then you do what you need to or want to do. Terry Savage is out of touch with reality. I don't think she is. I think she's very much in touch with the math. She's a financial analyst. You'll hear more from her next Wednesday and maybe more about this. Kim Kuypers joins us, Kuyper Family Farm. It's a return visit from Kim, and you're on WGN. How are you, Kim?
I'm great, John. Nice to talk to you again.
I think last we talked about the pumpkin patch, weren't we?
We were in the apple orchard, so now we're into spring and tulips.
So what's going on there then? What do I get when I come out?
We're going to host our first annual Midwest Tulip Fest. It starts on Saturday, and when you come out, you get to see over 5 acres of tulips blooming, 30-plus different varieties. We planted 300,000 bulbs last November, and they're coming up. They look wonderful.
You plant those by hand?
No, thank goodness. No, there's an attachment.
Is that something you always grow? Are there local tulip festivals?
We are one of two currently in the Chicagoland area, and this is a first for us this year. We have not grown tulips before this.
And how's the crop? Did it work? Were you nervous as a kind of newbie to that particular plant? You do apples and pumpkins.
Right, yeah, very nervous. Although, you know, we planted them last November, and it's just been kind of a waiting period now. And with this spring, the way it's been, we have been waiting a really, really long time. The crop looks great. They love this temperature that we've been all sort of struggling through, the cooler weather and the rain. They absolutely loved it, and they look amazing. Every day I go out, it just blows me away every time I see them.
To see, what is it, 300,000, did you say?
300,000, yeah. It's spread over 5 acres. It's planted in sort of a rolling fan design, so it's just spectacular to see it. It's just amazing. And we also built a 30-foot Dutch-style windmill that actually turns, the blades on it turn. So that's plopped right down in the middle of all this sea of color. We've got tractors and wagons and old cars and picture frames and bicycles and all sorts of props out there that you can stand with, you know, with the sea of tulips behind you for some wonderful photo ops. So it's so beautiful.
I must tell you, I'm not looking at that, but it does my heart good to know that that's there, that in this dreary world, we have some color and you guys have made it happen. That sounds positively lovely.
Yeah, we're super excited about it and hope it'll be a real breath of fresh air coming out of winter. And, you know, what's been really not a bad spring, but sort of dreary. So hopefully this weekend, the weather's supposed to be great. It'll be a great kickoff to the festival, which we hope will last about 3 weekends total. It's a really short window that they're blooming. We've planted them, the different varieties, so that they come in at different times. So, you know, maybe once one particular variety is sort of reached its peak and is fading out, there'll be one right behind it.
That's a good idea. Like, you need my advice. Did you do different colors? What do we see out there?
A sea of colors, yes, and they're planted in blocks. We have one block that is a mixture of colors, and actually in that block you can pick your own bouquets for an additional charge, but then the rest of them are in a block of sort of that wave design, fan design blocks of color. But every color under the rainbow is out there, so it's a great opportunity for moms to bring the family out for a great family picture. The other thing that we did that's a little bit different than some of the other festivals is that we have over 15 of our farm-themed attractions open also. So, you know, the kids can only take about half an hour of the pretty tulips, and then they're kind of bored. So there's our animal encounter there, our animal experience with lots of spring farm animal babies. We've got our crazy combine and our tractor tire mountain, over 15 different attractions. So the kids can have fun too, besides, you know, having to stand for pictures, which they don't like to do for very long.
This is in Maple.
And then on the weekends.
Maple Park, right? Maple Park. We're talking about the Clapper Family Farm and the Tulip Fest. The first time they've done it, the second in Chicago. What do you know? We got one. The fest begins Saturday, this Saturday, the 7th. You'll pay just a little bit to get in. Monday through Friday, open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. You pay $11.99 online. You pay $15 at the gate. Saturday and Sunday, they're 10 to 7, $15 online, $18 at the gate. You can add on admission ticket options, like if you want to cut some tulips, if you want the jumping pillow wristband for the kids, stuff like that. And figure this weekend and the next two after that are the prime ones. So let's get on out there. How far are you from downtown Chicago then? From the Loop to where you are, what's it going to take me?
It's just a little over an hour, hour to an hour and a half, depending on the traffic. Not bad at all. Straight out 88 if you're coming directly west.
West of Chicago. Great. All right. Well, Kim, it's so nice to talk to you. I'll talk to you in the fall, I'm sure, maybe later in the summer. But Tulip Fest starts this weekend. If you want to find out more, KuipersFamilyFarm.com. They spell that K-U-I, KuipersFamilyFarm.com. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks, John.
Stay well. 300,000-plus tulips. Who doesn't want a photo in front of that? It's 1243 on WGN. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new report says cargo volume at O'Hare Airport reached a new record last year, climbing 27% from 2020. Cranes reports the airport handled 2.5 million metric tons in 2021. It's a jump of 42% over 2019, but the trend for this year shows the level of cargo falling. In January, it rose just 4%, and in February, cargo volume fell 15%. Rising fuel prices and COVID-19 lockdowns in China are likely to blame. China is O'Hare's largest source of cargo, and COVID has shut down factory production in many Chinese cities. Deerfield-headquartered Walgreens has hired a new chief marketing officer. Lynn Peters will join the company as a senior vice president. According to Cranes, Peters most recently had the CMO job at Calvin Klein. She also worked at Starbucks as vice president of loyalty, store product, and marketing. Peters will be in charge of all marketing activities for Walgreens. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, if you're looking for a job, not you, John, other people, Uncle Sam is hiring thousands and thousands of jobs, with many of them focused here in the heartland where food is produced.
We need engineers. We need scientists. We need folks who are good with business, with numbers. We've got a lot of resources we need to push out the door to rural communities, so we need people who can work on grants administration, contracts administration.
That is Office of Personnel Management Director Kieran Ahuja, who says that does not mean you have to go work in D.C.
80% of federal jobs are outside of Washington, D.C.
Jewel Brenna is the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture. She says many of the jobs involve improving rural America and building out infrastructure to better get products from the farm to your table.
It's going to really help relieve the bottlenecks, strengthen supply chains, and our ability to move products faster to the market, which you can imagine will be powerful for our farmers and ranchers and for our rural businesses.
The jobs are paid for with billions of dollars in the bipartisan infrastructure law that Congress passed.
What you can do on usajobs.gov is you can build out your resume. You can link to lots of different opportunities.
And to see all of the jobs available, go to www.bil, B's in baseball, il.usajobs.gov. Meanwhile, if you're an Illinois teenager interested in a career in ag, a pretty cool summer road trip is being organized. Josh St. Peters is EVP of Illinois Beef.
Yeah, the Livestock Leadership Institute is a program that the Beef Association puts together in conjunction with the Pork Producers and the Midwest Dairy Association.
40 lucky teenagers will get on a bus and visit beef, pork, and dairy farms and facilities on their way to Lexington, Kentucky. There, they will check out the thoroughbred racing industry. Yes, it is part of agriculture, as Orion said many, many times. Deadline to enter is coming up, middle of May, and it's for 16 to 20-year-olds, and they don't have to be farm kids, just interested in a career in ag or animal sciences. You can apply at IllinoisBeef.com. From the farm to your belly, today is National OJ Day. The juice, not the guy. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
I'll tell you who also appreciates the Midwest, Dale Buss, the veteran journalist and founder and executive director of the Flyover Coalition, flyovercoalition.org. Hey, Dale, welcome back.
Hi, John. Thanks.
You should do a write-up on that. Talk about the flyover land. That's WGN Radio land, my friend.
Absolutely. That's why I so enjoy talking to you, because I know by doing that, I'm talking to all sorts of residents of flyover country. So I appreciate that.
Speaking of flyover country, there's a list out of the best and worst states for business, according to CEOs. What have you discovered here?
Well, every year I do this story for Chief Executive Magazine, and they base it on a survey of several hundred, usually 700 to 800 CEOs from around the country who say what they like and don't like about state business climates. And every year for the 15 years of the survey, Texas has finished number one. The obvious reasons of the appeal of their business climate, the diversity of it, the policies, the tax-friendly policies, the business-friendly policies. They want everybody to come there. Florida is number two, and they've kind of settled into that position. Once again this year, they're number two. And obviously, there's kind of a new twist to that with the governor DeSantis and all his business-friendly policies, the resistance to lockdowns and all that, even though he is fighting with Disney right now. What's interesting for the Midwest, though, is that over the last several years, a number of Midwestern states have steadily climbed through the rankings. So you've got Indiana, which usually places five or six. This year it's six. But Governor Holcomb there has continued the business-friendly policies of his predecessors, and it's really helped Indiana diversify their economy, have a business-friendly reputation, and just they're always solidly in the discussion now for a lot of new projects. Ohio is number seven, and that's where they were the year earlier. And, of course, what's interesting in Ohio is you've got this Intel plant coming there, construction beginning next year. And the fact that it was able to attract this $20 billion investment from Intel is a great indication of the hard work that folks have been doing in Ohio. And then there's Iowa, Michigan, Wisconsin, Missouri are all like 16 through 20. And I'll just finish by saying, interestingly, Illinois has for many, many years been number 48 in this survey. And even some of the more business-friendly things coming out of Governor Pritzker's office and kind of talk about becoming an EV capital and some of the tech skin-back schemes that have come out just don't convince CEOs that Illinois is a place that that they want to put a new facility.
Well, in fact, the three biggest Democrat states, California is the 50th, the worst state, according to CEOs for business. New York is 49, then Illinois, then New Jersey, then Washington State, then Oregon, then Massachusetts, then Connecticut. That's a big, bright blue spot. And I wonder if the fact that CEOs don't like it necessarily means that these states are doing it wrong. That is, maybe they're being taxed more than they like. Maybe the climate isn't as friendly as they want. But perhaps there's an upside to that as well.
Well, of course. I mean, absolutely there is. And this is the view of CEOs who, obviously their prime concern is their shareholders and their companies. A lot of family-owned companies are in this survey as well, and they have, similar concerns. But obviously, I mean, you talk to people about California, and they'll say, well, we have a lot of creative workers. We have a high standard of living. People still want to come here. And yet the bottom line is the concerns that CEOs had about California several years ago are starting to be borne out in migration patterns out of California, companies leaving California, especially for Texas. So I think, unfortunately, maybe for Illinois, what we're seeing is the beginning of what I'm sure you've heard is the Californification of Illinois. And I think it's behind California and the disdain that CEOs have, but Illinois is losing people, too. So, I mean, I think there is a close tie between what CEOs want to do and economic prosperity for a state. But obviously, that's far from the entire picture. And the blue states would argue, look, we have better benefits. We have this. We have that. We care about our people more. Whatever it is. So there's a continuing debate about that, of course.
Well, you're not going to be able to care for people very much or very well if you don't have robust businesses and a vibrant business community. So I'd sure like to see us out of number 48, JB. And I'm out of time today, but it's a fascinating look. And you can find it at chiefexecutive.net, for whom you write. And you can also find out more at flyovercoalition.org. That's Dale Buss. Nice to talk to you, Dale.
All right. Thank you.